The 19th of February, that is the date that my next Top 50 online program starts. So if you want to work with me and my coach Emma over the next 12 weeks to help transform your physique, whether that's men or women's building muscle, toning up, losing body fat, or a combination of all three, send me an email, brian@briankeenfitness.com, or head over to my website, www.briankeenfitness.com, and just click on the contact, and I'll send you all the information on the new Top 50 program that is running for 12 weeks and includes all the new recipes that we built, the challenges, alongside the weekly Q&As, and check-ins Monday or Friday with my coach, Emma. So looking forward to working with you on the 19th of February. Enjoy today's podcast.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness to share tips about all things that can support you on your journey to becoming the best version of yourself and build a bulletproof mindset to get whatever you want out of life. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A, and I've pooled all these questions from my Instagram. So some from Instagram DM, some from Instagram Live, and ones that have came in randomly through there. So if you're not following my Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness on there, any questions you have, be sure to send them over. And a massive thank you in advance or for everybody that has sent in these questions. We'll get rocking with the first one. So first question comes in from Best Howler. What do you think of juice diets? So again, context is key in terms of what the overall end goal is. One of my issues with bar and juice diets in general is the ones that are sold as the quick fix, you know, eat or drink 300 calories or 600 calories a day, two shakes a day, and you'll lose weight. And by all means, you will 100% lose weight and lose body fat, some body fat, more weight. You'll lose a little bit of muscle as well if you're eating 600 calories a day from a juice. What will happen is your body will, you drop into that amount of a deficit from your normal maintenance, and most people's maintenance are going to be around that 1500, 2000, 2500 to just stay the same weight. If you drop that to 600 calories, it doesn't matter if you're getting it from a fucking juice or from a Mars bar, you're going to lose weight, and you're probably going to lose a little bit of body fat with that, and you'll lose some muscle with that. But what happens is when you go on those short-term diets, it down-regulates your hormones like your ghrelin, your leptin, which are your hormones that regulate your satiation, that tell you you're hungry or full, and that regulate your hunger, that basically tell you you're hungry. When they get down-regulated, they can have a terrible rebound out the other side when you go back consuming normal foods. So there's a joke in the juice and bar diet community called a rebound. It's where you start at 50 kilos, for example, you lose 5 kilos with the juice or bar diet, and then you have your rebound, and you end up back at 55 kilos. So you're now 4 or 5 kilos heavier than you were when you started 12 weeks later because of your ghrelin and leptin getting down regulated. And I've lived this a small bit when I used to compete as a bodybuilder and I was traveling the world as a professional fitness model, when I used to diet for shows and I would go into a massive restriction. Now, I never dropped them that low, but in context of the amount of muscle I was carrying and the way my body was, I would down-regulate those hormones to a degree. And what would happen post-show or post-photo shoot was you can never get full. And I lived it firsthand where you're eating food and so much food, and it's normally not clean quality foods. You're normally eating sugary foods because you're just, your body, it's kind of like a floodgate opening. When you've been eating super clean foods, or in this case, juice or bar diet for 6 weeks, and you've been really strict with that, and you get a little bit of sugar, the floodgates open and then you can't stop. But what happens is when you downregulate ghrelin, for example, you can't get full. So you just keep eating and eating and eating and eating, and you're never full or satisfied. What happens now is if you eat a tub of Ben and Jerry's or a tub of ice cream, you finish that and you're like, oh, I could eat another one, but I'll probably feel sick if I do. Whereas I remember coming back from one show, I remember having 6 or 7 tubs, and I was just able to eat them over and over and over again. And that was 6 or 7,000 calories in the space of about an hour and a half. and your body can consume it. You can actually eat it, whereas now that would make me throw up and make me sick. And that's what happens when you downregulate hormones. Your hormones are so powerful. So it's very, very important to not fall into that trap. And it is very, very tempting to go down the juice or bar diet as a short fix or a quick fix. But the reality is very, very different to what you'll see in terms of how your body responds out the other side when you go back eating regular foods. That being said, when you talk the context of juice diets, sometimes people talk juice diets in terms of blending all their foods and blending their fruit and blending their vegetables. That can work very, very well. And in the case of a detox, I think particularly factoring that in once every 6 or 12 months for a week or so can be very, very good for the system. What you'll find is a lot of people that will do strategic fasting or strategic juice fast can work very, very well at just clearing everything out of your body. Now, it's sometimes sold as a detoxifying thing, and you'll flood your body, or you'll detox your body from all the toxins. Again, I haven't read any scientific studies that show that, but what can happen is it can take a lot of stress off your digestive system. And I know this from even trying it myself. When you reduce the amount of food you're taking, your digestive system just doesn't have to work as hard, and then you feel better and everything just starts to regulate more. You end up being more regular at the bathroom, your energy seems to be a lot stabler, you're not being bloated or full, and you can just feel better. But the advice that I would offer is don't do it any longer than a week. So again, it's not a one size fits all in terms of a juice diet is a good. Again, I think if you're able to sustain it long term, one of the issues I'd have with a diet like that where you're blending all your fruits and your vegetables and you're probably getting all your micronutrients that you need, you're adding some protein powder in there, you're probably getting all the essential amino acids you need, if you're adding in some flaxseed oil or coconut oil or different variations of hemp seed oil, you're probably getting all the essential fatty acids that you need. So in terms of nutritionally, you're going to be sound and you're going to be okay. But whether you can sustain that long term and actually cut food out long term, I haven't heard of too many people that can do it. So again, I'm not saying don't, because there are definitely going to be a percentage of people, but they're going to be the outliers that are able to live on juice and not have any physical food in their nutritional strategy or nutritional plan at any time. So again, context is key. I would probably err away on the side of your juice and your bar diets or your juice diets where you're having 600 calories a day. The truth is, if I was doing that, I'd probably eat a fucking Snickers or a Mars bar, and I would split it up into two Snickers bars a day. I'd get my 600 calories, and at least I'd be able to eat chocolate that way, and you'll lose body fat. Again, you'll downregulate your hormones, you'll have a negative rebound, but at least you get to eat chocolate for 6 weeks. So that would be my thought process on it. I'm not saying do that, it's a terrible idea, but so is a juice diet. So hopefully that helps. And then in terms of strategic juice diets for a week, by all means try them, give your digestive system a rest and see how your body responds, and hopefully that helps. Next question comes in from President Harper on Instagram. Do you track fruit as carbs? Yes, I do it myself when I used to track my carbohydrate intake, and I do it with people that are coming through my programs. So for those of you who are coming through my Top 50 program, you see that your all the calories and macros and everything are calculated, your calories in, your calories out every day, all your macros and every meals, the recipes that you add in, all the calories are calculated and the fruits are included in there. I tend to give vegetables, particularly green leafy veg, as a free food for a couple of reasons. One, they're so loaded with fiber, you tend to fill up quite quickly on them. And two, the micronutrients in most green veg tend to be so low in calories, and the actual return on investment in terms of nutritional impact tends to be so high. I tend to include them in there as a freebie. Also, the training programs are quite hard. Again, there's different variations depending on each person's goals. Some people are doing beginner, the intermediate, the pro version. Some people are doing the home workout. Some people are doing the HIIT workout. It depends on each person's schedule and what works best for them. And then we tailor it depending on that. But in terms of counting vegetables, I tend to not count them, but fruits are a little bit different, and also the context of the fruit that you take, your body absorbs them very, very differently. The way you're going to process an apple is going to be super different to the way that your body processes a watermelon. For example, glucose and your fructose that's in your apple is going to be a little bit slower digesting, so it's going to regulate and stabilize your blood sugar levels and give you a steady release of energy, or something like a watermelon that you have is going to spike your insulin levels, it's going to spike your blood sugars. Things like your melons can do the same thing. Dates particularly are another high sugar in terms of high GI, in terms of the speed at which they release glucose from your body. Or in the way they release insulin in the body from glucose. I would, again, be factor in your different fruits depending on what the goals are. I'm a massive fan of things like pineapple, blueberry, apples. I think they're great fruits to include in most plans. But then the other high sugar, high insulin spiking foods, your dates, your melons to a degree, certain bananas to a degree, I tend to limit them for that reason. One of the protocols that I follow, again, this is for about 80% of people that come through my programs, it varies person to person, and it's always about finding what works best for you. But the majority of people will try and keep the blood sugar stable throughout the day and not spike insulin levels, because what can happen with that is you end up, one, energy levels tend to drop off. If you spike your insulin too high, your energy can drop back off, and then you're doing this roller coaster all day where your energy's up and then it's down, and you're eating something sugary again to bring it back up, and you have this roller coaster. So on top of it not being super beneficial for your body losing body fat or building muscle because you're constantly trying to keep that blood sugar balance, it can also send your mood and your energy levels all over the place. So your actual training output can suffer, and you may not train as hard, and you may not be able to concentrate as well at work or at home or family with the kids. And you can have all these secondary stressors kick in because you're not focused at work, or you're not showing up properly at home with your kids or your family. And then you can have all these negative stress and cortisol that can bring on in life. Again, it's not as simple as 1 + 1 = 2. If it was, everybody would follow this nutritional plan, they'd factor in their fruits on this, they'd eat this food source or supplement, they'd do this training program, and they'd look the way they wanted to look. If that was the case, everybody would do that and everyone would look the way they wanted. But it's not as simple as that. So in terms of tracking your fruit, I would advise tracking it, factor it into your plan, and then the food choices and fruit choices that you decide to use, factor them in on the different times on what's going to benefit you really well. You know, apples are great as a snack. Pineapples, blueberries are great as a snack throughout the day. They're really easy to pick up. They're one of my go-to foods when I'm traveling because it makes it very, very easy. I can go in and pick up a small tub of pineapple. I'll add blueberries to it, and I might have an apple as well, and then a protein shake, and then that's your snack covered. So again, track it, factor it in. Depending on what your goals are, it's going to be very important. If you're trying to build muscle, your calories are obviously going to be higher and you'll factor them in. If you're trying to lose body fat, fruit can be really good because it's a little bit lower calorie than some alternative options. And then factor it into your plan and then track them as you go along. Okay, next question comes in from Ushin Daily 04. Are there any good quotes or advice for athletes? What I love about sport and I love about fitness is I live by the adage that how you do anything is how you do everything. And sports and fitness is an amazing metaphor for life. And one of my favorite sporting quotes that I think works for all areas of life, and I heard this from Paul O'Connell, who played international rugby for Ireland. I know Joe Smith, who used to be the manager of Ireland, was big on this quote and had them tattooed on their brain, where he speaks on focus on the moment in front of your face, which basically means that it's being present right now and doing the next job as effective as you physically can. And it's funny because on the sports field and on the pitch, regardless of your sport, it's so true, because the best athletes in the world, your Ronaldos, your LeBron Jameses, your Michael Jordans when they were playing, your Tiger Woods, the people that excelled to become nearly bigger than their sport were people that were able to focus on the moment in front of their face, which basically means that if they had a good or a bad shot or a good or a bad play before them, that moment was now gone and they were focusing on the next moment in front of their face. They also weren't focusing on the play after the next one because that hadn't come yet. And sometimes in life, we can be very, very similar. And I spoke in my book, The Fitness Mindset, in the mindset section, that one of the things that I've had to work on over the years is being a lot more present and being playing with the moment in front of my face. I don't tend to work and look at things that have happened in the past. I tend to be very, very future orientated, which supports me and helps me massively in achieving the goals that I set out to achieve. But it can also lead to a state of anxiety, because when you're thinking about things that have to come, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, you can put you into a state of anxiety because you have no control over that situation. And I live by the Charlie Munger quote that step by step we get ahead, not necessarily in fast spurts. And step by step is doing the things right now that are in front of your face that's going to help with the end goal. And in sport, it's the next play. How can I get the next move right? How can I, you know, I missed that last shot or I missed that last tackle. How can I get the next play right? And every moment is a new moment. And when you're able to switch your focus onto the next moment, that's when you're able to ramp up performance, because you're constantly focused on the thing that's most important. Life is the same. The things that I do every day, the bigger tasks, the things like writing books, creating the podcast, interviews, when I was teaching, when I was trying to get my business off the ground initially 4, 5, 6 years ago, it was focusing on the moment in front of your face. What can I do today that's going to help me towards the end goal? What can I do right now that's going to help me towards the end goal? And then you chunk it down and you break it down. By all means, living in the past, living in the future, where you're pulling that vision into the present, can help you massively. It's one of the things that has supported me more than anything else. And I spoke about it in my book, that it's a catch 22, that I'm so grateful that I'm able to see that and I'm able to bring back the vision and just wait for reality to catch up with it. But it can lead to that anxious state. And again, mindset is something I do a lot of work on, because when you have that type A personality type, that go, go, go personality type, where you're constantly moving on to the next thing and you're never celebrating achievement because there's something else coming, that can put you into a constant state of unease. So playing with the moment in front of your face. For me right now, one of the things that I use, and this is a really weird example that I'm going to give now, but I'll share it because I don't tend to hold anything back on the podcast, is one of the focuses of my life right now is building that relationship with my daughter. My daughter is now 2.5. She's 3 in May. And that's the most important relationship in my life. That is on par or equal with the relationship I have with my mom. And the truth is, building that relationship requires being present in that moment in time every single time. And I'm very aware that the way my mind works, there was times when I would be sitting and playing with Holly and I would be thinking about a meeting that I had the following week, or I'd be thinking about a target that I had the following week, and my mind would be shifting to what was going on in the future, and it would take me out of the present completely. I could be watching a movie or playing a game, but my mind would be elsewhere. My body was there, but my mind was elsewhere. And this fucking weird thing would happen when I was working. I would feel guilty that I wasn't spending enough time with Holly. If it was, you know, a Friday evening, I don't work weekends anymore, and it was a Friday evening or whatever it was, and I had a task that I was doing, I'd feel super guilty that I wasn't spending time with her, or quality time with her. And then the flip would happen when I'd spend time with her, I'd be thinking about work that I need to do. And it's such a fucked up reality that you're constantly jumping between the two. And I know a lot of people will resonate with this, because you're wondering sometimes why relationships and friendships or partnerships or whatever it is suffering, your job not getting tasks done, because you're constantly worried about what's going on at home. And when you're at home, you're worried about what's going on at work, and you're not able to kind of be present and focus on the moment in front of your face. And one of the things that has helped me massively that I'll share here is I live my life by the 97-year-old rule, which is every time I make a decision in life, I look to my 97-year-old self living on a deathbed, and I ask myself, well, what would I regret more? And then I make my decision based out of would I regret doing that? Would I miss doing that? And now one of the switches and flips I put onto that is the thing that I struggle with is that scarcity mindset, which is hardwired in my DNA from the way that I was brought up, which is really, really weird, because when you have a scarcity mindset in terms of monetary, and I'm very, very fortunate in terms of the money that I make, the investments that I've made, from a financial and a pure numerical point of view, I'm super secure and very, very fortunate and grateful for the position that I'm in. But I've been hardwired, particularly from involvement and relationships with my dad, who is in the same position, who has that constant scarcity mindset. And it is something that is wired in me that I have to catch. And when I'm spending time with Holly at times and we're playing a game, I'm worried about, right, I need to make this amount of money next week, I need to make this amount of money next month, which is ridiculous, because the truth is I don't when I break it down. But that scarcity mindset is something that's very, very hardwired within me. And what I start to do now is I ask myself, if I'm on that 97-year-old bed, how much money would I give to be in this moment right now, to be playing this game of Fish and Hook, or to be in this cinema watching, or to be in this room right now watching Frozen or playing? How much money would I give to relive this moment if I was 97 years old on my deathbed? And that instantly clicks me back into the moment, and it completely takes away everything else. So that's a strategy that I've started to use, and it supports me consistently, and I do it every time now I feel my mind wandering and worrying about a task at work, or worrying about a task or a meeting or a job or an interview or whatever it is that I'm doing. I'll bring myself back and go, how much would I give to live this moment right now? And it's normally priceless, or it's every single penny that I have, and that pulls me into the present. I'm not necessarily saying that that's going to be the best thing for you to do or for anyone listening, but it's the strategy that I found has worked for me. So again, find your own version of that. But the quote that I live by, which is very much down to that, is focus on the moment in front of your face, because at the end of the day, the past is gone, the future hasn't arrived yet, and the present, you know, they call it a present because it's a gift, it's the only thing that you truly have, and you gotta learn to live in it, because Seneca said, and one of my favorite quotes is, man never puts his unhappiness, is never confined to the present. It's always about thinking about something that might go wrong in the future, or worried about something that will go wrong in the past. It's very, very rarely, if not ever, confined to the present moment. Next question comes in from Smith Laura on Instagram. What would you recommend for severe bloating? I find it terrible after eating pulses and green veg, and it's quite painful. Okay, so the first thing I'd offer on bloating, which is very, very obvious answer on this one, but I'm going to expand and flesh it out just to try and provide as much value to everybody listening, is cut out the trigger foods. It's funny because we have in our mind certain foods that are super healthy for us. And by all means, they are. If you break them down on a micronutrient value, things like your pulses, your green veg, broccoli in particular, is an amazing food. And I'm going to use broccoli for the context of this answer because it makes it super easy, because it's a very high trigger food for people. Broccoli is an amazing food. One of the best ones you can eat in terms of micronutrient value. However, for a certain demographic of people, it's a super high trigger food in terms of bloating and swelling your stomach. So there are people that will come through my program who think that, well, right, broccoli's really, really super low calorie, it's got loads of micronutrients, it's really good for me, but their stomach is swollen and they're walking around like they're 3 months pregnant all the time. And we cut the broccoli out and it disappears overnight because it's a high trigger food for them. Not necessarily saying the food is bad, but your body may not digest it that well. So first thing on this, to answer this question quite simply, is cut your trigger foods. So when you pull back on your nutritional plan, you'll see with a lot of people, there are certain foods that are quite high trigger for people. So I would test those first and foremost. If you know after every meal of broccoli and pulses or green veg or certain foods you're eating that it's swelling your stomach, this is a really good, easy way to see if you're gluten intolerant, is if your stomach is swelling after eating a sandwich, you're possibly gluten intolerant. So try cutting out bread for a week, or try cutting out wheat for a week. See how your stomach feels. Does it flatten out and you feel good again, and then you reintroduce it and the bloat comes back? You may not be digesting that food that well. There's no bad food. It's just that, well, there is bad food, fucking processed food and trans fatty acids. But in terms of things like pulses and veg and fruits, there's not necessarily a bad food. There may be a bad food for your body and it may not do that well with it, but you got to play around with your nutritional plan in spite of the fact that you don't digest that food that well. So what may work for one person won't work for another. Gluten is a great example. It's one of my favorite ones to use, because one of the questions that I get asked regularly is, oh, will I cut gluten? Should I cut bread completely? I'm like, well, it depends. Certain people that work really well with gluten and they have no issue digesting it will have whole grain sandwich at their lunchtime, and it works amazingly well for them. It's handy, it's quick, it's efficient, it fits into their plan, their body's responding well, their energy levels are good, then that food works brilliantly for them. You give it to another person and they're sitting on the toilet for 2 hours. So that food doesn't work for them. So it's not a one case, one size fits all. So in terms of bloating, first thing I would look at is your trigger foods, and I'd minimize and cut those. The next thing then is I would seriously consider adding back in a strong probiotic. This one's a little bit of a cookie cutter answer in terms of bloating, because in my experience, 90% of people, bloating can disappear overnight from cutting certain foods and adding in a strong probiotic. What happens with a lot of people, and I'm a victim of this in myself, I was pretty sick when I was in secondary school and ruined a lot of my gut bacteria, and antibiotics tend to remove all that good bacteria from your stomach. So if you've been on a course of antibiotics over the last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, you may have a reduced amount of good bacteria in your gut. So adding in a probiotic can bring that balance back into normality, and it can automatically improve your digestion and everything that you're eating. One of my mentors used to say to me, it's not about what you eat, it's about what you absorb. And the truth is, it's a combination of both. The foods you choose are important, but what you absorb is just as important. You're way better off eating 2,000 calories of food that your body is absorbing and getting all the macro and micronutrients that you need, than eating 4,000 calories where you're not digesting 3/4 of it because your gut bacteria is off. So adding in a strong probiotic, it's hard to recommend because different strains and different brands will have a different impact on your body. I'm a big fan of the Udo's Choice Super 8 Gold. Love that probiotic. It's super easy to get in Evergreen and any health store generally have it. I tend to ferment apple cider as well. I add in some kefir, and then I add in different strains of probiotics from Renew Life. So I make my own. I drink a lot of kombucha. I love the Hola kombucha, and because that can just make balance out your gut bacteria as well, and that helps and supports me. I also find my energy level is so much better. My mood is way more balanced. A lot of people, again, that I've worked with, particularly people with things like anxiety disorders or mood deficiencies that have been environmental or nutritional, and I'm not talking depression where there's a biochemical imbalance. A lot of people will find Western medicine and different things will balance that out better. But for people that have environmental depression or gut depression, because 95% of your serotonin, your happy hormone, is made in your gut. So if there is a throw off there or a disconnect there in that gut brain barrier, your mood can be off. So that's why looking after your stomach with the foods that you eat, minimizing processed foods, eating high quality foods, eating organic where possible, but there's no spray or pesticides on it, particularly when it's the same price, can all help your gut bacteria. So they're just things to look at. So number one is find your trigger foods. Number two is consider adding in a strong probiotic, and hopefully when you put the two together, it should reduce bloating for 99% of people. Next question comes in from Melissa Hewitt. You always talk about glute activation. This may be a stupid question, but how do I know they're activating? Okay, it's not a stupid question at all. Well, there's never any stupid questions. One of the things I talk with people in my programs and my groups is that there's never any stupid question. If it's something you don't know, that's where asking the question helps. Because if you don't know it, there's a gap in your knowledge somewhere there. And if anyone can provide that value, that's literally what they're there for. It's what I'm here for. It's what other fitness professionals, nutrition professionals are here for. It's to provide value and help. So in terms of glute activation, there's a couple of ways. It depends on reverse engineering what the goal is. So the context of a girl trying to build her bum and feel the mind-muscle connection in her glutes, the answer is going to be a little bit different to a guy on the pitch who's trying to get faster. So for example, when I have my GA Lean Body guys, and I'll use both of my programs, my Top 50 and my GA Lean Body, because it's going to be a really good context to the two different scenarios for glute activation here. For my GA players, we do a lot of direct glute work where you'll feel your glute to a degree, will keep their hip flexors loose, will keep the kinetic chain loose with the recovery strategy, and it'll get your glutes firing faster. And the way you'll know they're activating is you'll be faster. You'll be physically able to take off quicker. And one of the feedbacks, and anyone that's read a lot of the testimonies or video reviews and things that people send in from the GA program, is one of the first things they'll say is they're faster, because we do a lot of direct glute work. Because if you're able to take off quicker over 20 meters, you're going to be able to beat your man to a ball, and that helps 99% of athletes. So that's one way. So there's the actual physical performance. In terms of glute activation, then in terms of composition, so in my Top 50 program, the girls and the female version, there's different variations, beginner, intermediate, and pro variation of the program. But in all the variations, there's a glute day for girls. So glute and hamstrings is one of the training days. And the way that we find that they're activating is you're trying to squeeze the muscle at the top of most movements or at the bottom part of the movement, depending on the exercise, so that you're able to squeeze that muscle and engage it in a mind-muscle connection. So for those of you who read my book, The Fitness Mindset, you may have read in the training section about mind-muscle connection. It's where you literally connect your mind to the muscle, which is broken down is you feel the muscle you're trying to work. A lot of people can do it with their bicep. If you tense and squeeze your bicep, you can feel that muscle harden and contract. That's mind-muscle connection. You're feeling the muscle, basically you're able to feel it in your mind. Glutes are the same. So for example, at the top of a squat and a barbell box or a barbell squat, if you're coming up and you're squeezing your bum cheeks together at the top and you're engaging and squeezing the muscle, that's activating your glutes. When you drop down into a squat then and you feel that slight release at the bottom, that's releasing your glutes and it's going to give you a better engagement at the top. So that's just an example of glute activation. Another really good way to build that mind-muscle connection is doing things like single leg work or single leg kickbacks on a cable machine, and you put your hand on the muscle and at the top contraction, so the top part of a kickback, you tap your glute until it contracts. You have a neuromuscular response to touch. It's why sometimes in the gym when you see a guy doing a bicep curl and he's tapping his bicep at the top of the muscle, sometimes you look at him and go, that fucking guy tapping his muscle. But your body responds neuromuscularly to touch. So when you are in a contracted position and you tap that muscle, it can engage faster and engage better. So that can help improve your mind-muscle connection. Because what happens is when you're able to squeeze that muscle and you know how it should feel, it transfers over into other movement patterns. And then you're consistently able to connect with that muscle group, which means that it'll respond faster, which means it'll develop quicker, provided that everything else is right with your nutrition and your recovery. So in terms of glute activation, I hope that makes sense. So regardless of who's listening and where you're coming from, whether you're an athlete, a GA player, or you're a girl looking to build your bum, or just someone wondering how to get better glute activation, hopefully that helps clear that up a small bit more. And anytime I talk about it on my Snapchat, particularly when these come in, you'll know glute activation, glute firing, that's what I mean when I say activating your glutes or firing your glutes. Okay, next question comes in from Snapchat. Brian, what do I do if I have a small penis? From Anonymous, obviously. So I'm going to answer this question because I know it came in on a Snapchat Q&A and it helped a lot, the guy who sent the question in. I actually got a couple of messages from other guys who didn't send the question who said the answer helped them a lot feel better about their situation. So I'm going to flesh it out a small bit on the podcast here because I know there's a different audience on here as well. I know some of you follow my Snapchat, but if you missed that Q&A, you may have missed that question. So one of the things that is very, very helpful in terms of easing your anxiety is understanding that as guys, we tend to worry about the size of our genitalia in the same way that women worry about the size of their boobs or their body fat or just the way they look in general. Guys tend to look at the size of their manhood and feel worried, anxious, or insecure about it if they think it's on the small side of what the norm is. But the truth is, having been in the position that I've been in and been very, very fortunate to have talked to a lot of girls and a lot of females and lots of different people over the years, one of the things that I've learned is from general experience, not necessarily personal experience, is girls telling me that it's very important that they have a guy who knows how to hit the spot, and they'd rather have a guy with a small hammer who knows how to hit the nail on the head every time than a guy with a massive hammer who misses the spot every time. That can instantly ease a lot of anxiety. And realizing that guys tend to make a much bigger deal out of it than girls do. And a lot of girls will give you the feedback that aesthetically they prefer to be big and they love the way it looks, or they'll tell their friends or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, they prefer how it performs and making sure that they're satisfied at the end of the day. It's funny because the flip works for girls. Girls think that makeup and getting their fucking lips done and all this other fucking stupid shit, which may be important, and again I understand some of the evolutionary reasons for that. Evolutionary psychology will show that, you know, the puffed up lips, bleached blonde hair is one of the reasons we're attracted to it, is because it's a sign of youth in and fertility in back when you didn't have dye and you didn't have shit that went into your lips. But to girls, when they're competing with other girls, it's important for them. Whereas guys, most guys don't really give a shit about it. And the flip is the same. Girls generally don't care about penis size as much as guys tend to put the emphasis on it. It's also worth noting that it's a little bit of natural selection in terms of the size of male genitalia is generally directly linked in correspondence to the sexual promiscuity of the females within that species. So for example, male orangutans have pretty big genitalia because female orangutans are whores. So you tend to see that in evolution as well. Gorillas are the opposite. Then female gorillas are not very sexually promiscuous. It's why females have tiny knobs. So it is seeing that in the natural world and understanding that it's Darwinian natural selection can make you feel a little bit better about the whole situation. But the basic take-home advice that I'd offer is it's probably a bigger deal to you than the majority of people or the women you hook up with, or particularly the future girlfriend or wife or partner or whoever it is that you end up with. It tends to be more important to you, and you tend to put more emphasis on it. And I would advise that we are wired through evolutionary psychology to see the negatives in ourselves, because that shit kept you alive thousands of years ago. If you were going through the savannah 10,000 years and there was a fucking tiger in the trees or in the bushes, you needed to be able to see anything that was out of the norm or anything that may be potentially negative in the environment. Now we see it when we look in the mirror. It's why you look at a girl who's a subjective 9 or 10 out of 10, beautiful, gorgeous girl, and all they can see is that their boobs are too small, or that their lips aren't big enough, or that their ass is too big, or that their body fat is too high around the backs of their arms. They can only see the 5%. And I would implore anybody listening to this episode that there is 95% of you that is incredible in some way, shape, or form. Some of you may be physical, because that's genetic. Some of you may be your ability to listen to people. For some of you, maybe your ability to generate ideas and your effective muse for the people you're around and the world and their whole environment is better because you're there. You may be amazingly funny. You have the best jokes and you make people feel better about themselves. There's 95% of your personality or your looks or your way of being that's incredible, but you don't fucking see that. You see the 5% that's negative, because that's the way you were wired through evolution to see that shit when you look in the mirror or think about yourself. What I would implore you to do is think about your 95%. The next fucking time that 5% pops up and you see that body part you don't like because your arms aren't big enough, or your bum isn't big enough, or your boobs aren't big enough, or your face isn't attractive enough, or you don't feel sexy, or you don't feel smart, start focusing on the 95% that does make you feel better, because you have that and you just got to ask those questions. Tony Robbins talks that to get better answers, you need to ask better questions. You're asking the wrong fucking question. By all means, work on your weaknesses, but don't ignore your strengths, because everybody else sees those. And I guarantee your inner circle of five people, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your partner, your best friends, whoever your inner circle is, they fucking see it, but you don't. So next time you feel that coming on, that 5% of that physical body part that you're not happy with, or that 5% that you're not socially intelligent enough, or educationally, you don't have those degrees with those MDS or whatever it is after your initials, and you feel insecure about that, focus on the 95%. So what I want you to do as well at the end of this episode, if you're on my Snapchat, BrianK019, or you're on my Instagram, hit me up on DM and tell me what your fucking 95% is. Write that shit down so you can fucking see it and send it to me. I want you to see your 95%. I'll try and open as many of the messages as I can. Hopefully I'll be able to reply to as many as I can. I can't promise I'll get to all of them, but send me your 95%. Do you love the way your face is? Do you love the way your hips are, or you love your big bum, or do you love your abs, or do you love the way that you see the world, that you're always positive, that you're funny, that your friends think that you're the best thing since sliced bread, that your kids look at you with adoration every time you walk into the room? What's the 95%? Send me one of those. Send me something that makes you feel positive about yourself, and see that shit written down, because that can enforce it even more. So hopefully that helps. And in terms of small penis, it's your 5%. You know, it's probably a bigger deal in your head than anybody else's. So I hope this helps. A little bit of an obscure one to finish us off. So again, hope you got value from it. So that's everything in today's episode. A bit of a range of questions again. Again, hit me up on Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, Snapchat, BrianK019. Send me something positive about yourself. What's your 95%? Send me something that you love because I'll be checking those all day. And I hope you got a lot of value from today's episode. My website is www.briankeanefitness.com. You can see all the information on my programs on there. My Snapchat, BrianK019, as I mentioned earlier. My Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube's all Brian Keane Fitness. Thanks so much for listening.